You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hello and welcome to Bookworm. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Today my guest is Eduardo Galeano, and this is the final show in a series of shows, which is a collaboration between the Getty Center for the History of Art and Humanities and Bookworm. The title of the series is Imaging the Us, an Exploration of Autobiographical Writing. My guest today, Eduardo Galeano, is the author most recently of Walking Words, which is recently published by Norton. He's the author as well of The Book of Embraces and Memory of Fire, a historical trilogy, a history of the American continent from the tip of Alaska to the islands below South America, the history of the entire hemisphere. I wanted to begin by asking you then, having written a history that traverses so many boundaries, how do you make a collective history?
Well, I tried to help a little in the very difficult task of recovering memory, and trying to offer memory. It's broken in so many little pieces. So I'm offering these little pieces to readers, hoping that they may be able to create something with all these pieces of memory, of the broken memory, something like a reconstruction of the past, but not of a dead past, this boring promenades in the museums. I am the worst possible visitor of a museum. I feel asleep as soon as I enter in a museum. I like memory as a source of life, as something really, really alive that burn me as soon as I approach.
Your books have, up until Walking Words, which is a very much more unified book in its tone, your books have implied that the history of one person is the history of everyone, that anecdotes, personal anecdotes, are universal, that folk tales of a people are personal, and there's that extraordinary blending of the individual and the mass. Is that a political program for you?
No, it's much more. I have the certainty that the only way to look at the universe is through the keyhole. That real greatness is inside the small things, the small events, the daily life, ordinary people, things that are usually despised, scorned by the official history, who would pay no attention to this sort of apparently meaningless little anecdotes or experiences. And at the same time, it's I have the intention of not only of, you know, this sort of revelation of the hidden, the secret greatness of the little, but also the denunciation of the pettiness of the big, of the you know, the confusion nowadays we have in this world between the muscle and the strength, between between the big and the great. And I think that real greatness is not in all these spectacular heroes and battles and big shows of history, but that it's waiting for us. The real greatness is waiting for us, hidden. And I was trying to help to discover it and to offer it to people, because I feel I'm a feel thinking person, and I feel think that history speaks in metaphors, through metaphors. She's a poet, and she speaks through a language of symbols. And so each little event is a symbol of history. Each moment is a symbol of time. Each small part of land is a symbol of the universe, of the earth.
What is the relationship for you between history and memory?
Well, a memory is history. The alive memory of us, the old voices speaking to the future. That's a memory, the alive memory in which I really interested. No? The alive memory, not the dead one, but the alive memory, the old voices speaking to the future and illuminating it. I mean, allowing us to imagine the future instead of accepting it. That's a past I like.
You've suggested wonderfully that dreams are facts as well, and therefore that dreams are a part of history.
Yes, they are, and of reality, because reality is not only real in the daytime, when you are walking the streets and meeting friends and working and so on. Reality is also real in the night time, at night, when reality is sleeping or pretending to be sleeping. And then reality has dreams and nightmares. This is also reality. And sometimes this is a much more revealing reality than the other one, because, you know, it belongs to fantasy. I think that there is a very powerful energy, a very powerful energy in fantasy. In the relationship between fantasy and reality. Reality expresses herself through fantasy. And I wonder what would become of us if we wouldn't be able to look beyond these times of infamy and loneliness. And fantasy gives us the water we need. Otherwise, you know, human hope would die of thirst, and it's fantasy that is giving you the possibility of imagining a different world, the different world which is inside the world you are used to be in. There was a painter I was a friend of him when I was living in Venezuela some years ago. He's dead now. A very, very talented artist called Vargas. He was a carpenter and illiterate. And he didn't know he was a sort of a genius. Nowadays, his paintings are, you know, have high prices in the most sophisticated galleries, art galleries in the world. He's dead, and he never enjoyed it. I mean, he was living in poverty, and he, He was born and grew up and lived and died in the same town of Cabimas in the Golfo de Maracaibo in Venezuela, which was the source of oil for Western civilization, one of the main sources of oil for Western civilization. And then oil destroyed everything there. Everything is gray or black. Black waters, gray grass, gray sky. There are no birds, not a single green leaf, hoja, not a single green leaf, not a single alive fish in the lake. Everything was killed by oil. Well, in this gray landscape, he created an art which is incredibly joyful, full of colors, and giant birds, much bigger than persons. And all of his paintings are always, you know, singing and celebrating life, so brightly shining colors. And he is nowadays, especially nowadays, celebrated as a realist painter coming from, the exuberant nature of Latin America, and which is such a colorful nature. And I think they are those people that are buying his paintings because they suppose he is a realistic painter are not wrong, because he didn't paint the reality he knew, not at all, but he painted the reality he needed, which is also real. I mean, reality is not only the reality you are looking at each day, but also the other one, the hidden one, the secret one waiting for you.
So he was creating, in a way, what would be memory.
Yeah, the memory of hope.
Yes.
Because he was painting the other reality, the reality he was needing, a different reality of a world of joy and color, and it was denied to him. I mean, his life was so sad. You know?
Now, in your native Uruguay, you began as a journalist.
Yes.
Now, in your newest book, Walking Words, you are a collector and reimaginer of folk tales.
Yes.
These would seem to be extremely opposite poles, journalism and folk stories. Could you join them for me?
No, I don't think they are opposite, Michael, because I think, speaking about reality and memory, which is, of course, the way reality has to say, I'm not coming from the ear of a goat. I am coming from a long, long history, and I have traveled a long road, and I'm going on along the road. This reality was speaking to us each day, each night. She's quite mad. She's an absolutely crazy woman, reality. And so when I invent or I recreate these legends coming from American roads and all the voices I have heard along my life in America. America is not, of course, not only the United States, but America is also Latin America, and America is much broader, much more important, much deeper than you may think it is when you see it from the U.S. And so I was along my life hearing different voices, the collective memory of legends, myths, and And this was for me exactly the same like Chronicle. I mean, I think it's not different at all. And most of the legends are people exercising the right to dream.
I'm speaking to Eduardo Galeano, the author most recently of Walking Words. This does relate to the question of collective memory. Who has the right to collect the memory?
The duty, no? Everybody should have the duty to recover collective memory, which is more and more forbidden. There is a broken memory, a burnt memory, since the conquest. I mean, the Spanish conquerors burnt the collective memory of the Indians, the manuscripts of the, for instance, the Mayans and the Aztecs were burnt. I think only three or four codex mm-hmm. could be saved, but all the rest was burnt. And recently, I think it was in 1887 that the slavery was abolished. English is terrible. Was abolished in Brazil. I think it was 1887. I may be mistaken with dates. I'm not good for dates. But more or less, it was around the end of the century. And then all the documents about slavery were burnt because it was a shameful memory. And more recently, the Argentinian military dictatorship in the year 1983... the General Reinaldo Vignone issued a decree to ordering to burn all the documents related to the dirty war, which costed who knows how many human lives, perhaps 30,000 human lives. So you have a burnt memory, and it's very important to go on and look at the ashes, and try to recreate what was the truth, because or so many truths at once that makes the possibility, creates the possibility of rebuilding the broken memory. If you don't know where do you come from, it's almost impossible that you may know where are you going.
I wondered, you have spoken of a false counterculture made by media and consumer goods. These stories, these legends in Walking Words, they are the genuine counterculture, yes?
Well, they try to Not to be the genuine counterculture, but to help a little in what may be a way of dream our own dreams. You know, the right to dream. The right to dream. In 1948, the United Nations signed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 30 rights. And the right to dream is not there. And from my viewpoint, is the essential one, is the most important human right, the right to dream, the right to imagine the world, to the right to look beyond, to believe in another possible world instead of this world which is dooming so many people to hunger and solitude. And And so there is a way to dream, and we should recover the right to dream our own dreams, as we should recover the right to walk with our own legs and to think with our own minds and to feel with our own hearts. You know that nowadays it's difficult because this world of the end of the century, this world of the end of the millennium, is so unjust in the distribution of panes y peces, bread and fishes, los panes y los peces. It has never been so unjust as it is nowadays. It's so unequal in the distribution of bread, but it's so tan igualador, so obliging people to be equal in their habits, in their way of living, in their way of thinking, in their way of feeling. We are obliged to some sort of uniformization.
Not equal, but equalizing.
Not equal at all, but equalizing in the worst sense of the term. I mean, in the term that we are all trained to be consumers instead of be creators. We are all trained to adore cars and to have wheels instead of legs. We are all trained to fast food, fast life, fast cars, fast everything, fast reading perhaps.
I wanted to ask you, by the way, I'm talking to Eduardo Galeano, the author most recently of Walking Words and of the monumental historical trilogy Memory of Fire. I wanted to ask you about testimonial literature. I would guess that for you, testimonial literature includes many things, telling dreams as well as telling nightmares, as well as telling the events that occur when a nation is taken over by a dictator. I wondered, what is testimony?
Well, I think all literature is in a certain sense, a testimony. And because it comes from reality, from people. Even the dreams and nightmares are coming from reality. So you are taking them from reality and giving them back to reality. Taking them from people and giving them back to people. It depends on what you do with it. I mean, what happened with this words, experiences, emotions, you take, you find around you. What are you doing with them? Then you recreate, you create and recreate what you received. Otherwise, I'm not at all interested in this sort of, you know, testimony literature, which is something like tape recording of just a tape recording of people's lives. I'm not so interested on it. I'm mainly interested in the recreation of this raw material called life.
Now, 20 years ago, in your essay in defense of the word, you began with a central question. At a time in the world where the true censorship is the censorship of illiteracy, that people are being deprived of the right to read about, to be taught about their history.
Illiteracy, yes, and the other censorship, which is the price of books, for instance, no? They are so expensive that most of people, at least in Latin America, they cannot afford books.
And you've also discovered in the course of Memories of Fire, at the end of an exhausting day in a hard library, that when paper was first invented, that the Indians referred to it as God's skin.
Yeah, this was in memory of fire.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to ask you now, today, how you imagine the writer's role in the face of illiteracy and creating a memory for people who perhaps will never read.
Well, the first stage would be to respect and love these people. I mean, to not to share the traditional conception of culture, identifying culture with erudition. You know, I know so many doctors that are perfect beasts, brutes, and I know so many illiterate peasants or people that I have met along my life that have never read a book, but they are really wise people. So it depends on your relationship with other people and your relationship with nature, your skill to understand other people and to hear other voices. I'm not good to give or to receive advices, consejos. But if I would be obliged to give an advice, to give a consejo, a counsel or
counsel.
Advice? Counsel?
Or advice, yes.
Or advice to young writers or to young people wanting to become writers, I would tell them, don't be deaf if you don't want to be mute. In order to find your own voice, you should begin to be able to hear other people's voices. And this has nothing to do with the traditional conception of culture as illustration, you know. So it's not accumulating informations like a computer that you will be able to become a writer, because culture, real culture, means understanding and loving.
I've been speaking to Eduardo Galeano on the publication of his book, Walking Words, recently published by Norton. Thank you very much for joining me, Eduardo.
Thank you, Michael.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today is Scott Fritz. Special thanks to Roberto Bedoya of the Getty Center. This has been the final show in our series, Imaging the Us, an Exploration of Autobiographical Writing. Join us again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of vices, go in books.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold, and books,
books, books, books, books.
Too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse of time.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is made available to the public radio system by SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica.